Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 36, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have three returning guests.
I'm Tom from LA.
I'm Malcolm from Las Vegas.
And I'm Allison, also from LA.
And this week in the news, we have that Rubicon, that famous AMC show, has been canceled. I'm trying to sound sufficiently remorseful, and it's not working.
I can do the remorseful for you.
Okay.
I loved it.
I only made it through 6 episodes.
I made it through 4 episodes, but I have the other 9 on my DVR. Allison, should I purge them or watch them?
You should absolutely watch them. It really is a wonderful show. It is more slow-moving. It is more cerebral than the usual TV show. But when you get to about the halfway point is where things really get interesting and really start getting complicated, and the conspiracy really starts coming together as something that you understand. The characters start, you know, really becoming obvious. And, you know, I think the kind of thing that people were not getting into at the beginning, which is it just felt like a lot of meandering around, everything starts to really gel at that point. So it is absolutely worth watching. It becomes a fantastic show.
I think this is a cautionary tale for many people, this and Caprica's Fate.
Yes.
You've got to get the early episodes have to be really strong to hook your viewers in. If you're going to lag a little bit in the middle,
right?
But if you lag at the beginning, you're gonna lose. You're gonna hemorrhage viewers, and you're not getting a season 2.
Yeah, I think in fact they really mirror each other perfectly, because they did lose audiences for exactly the same reason. They took way too long to get going. They both became absolutely fantastic shows, must see viewing in my opinion. But they took too long, and by that time, most people had left.
I've heard the back 5 of Caprica are actually quite good, but...
Oh, they're brilliant. They're wonderful to watch.
Who knows when we're going to see them?
Well, our friends in Canada are getting them.
Yes.
I've been in contact with friends in Canada who said it's, you know, quite good, but, you know, too much, too little, too late.
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
All right, let's move on to the shows. We're going to do the timer and keep us on track, because last week's podcast was a little bit longer than I would have liked. So, first up, we're going to talk Walking Dead. Go.
Can we pour one out for the horse?
That's funny.
Well, in memoriam, drinker.
Well, actually, somebody was saying yesterday that they thought that it was a stupid idea to have a horse when you're running from zombies. And I was like, that's a brilliant idea, because if you actually do get surrounded by zombies, they go for the horse first and you have time to escape. If you were just the only person in a car, then you would be the only target and you would be dinner.
Yeah.
Actually, I think the horse was a perfect idea for the moment, for a couple of reasons. One, gas was so hard to find.
True.
You don't need that with a horse. You just need some grass on the side of the road. And the other thing is, there were so many cars that had already blocked up the road because they lost gas where they were, or their drivers were dead, that trying to maneuver through all that with a car would have been impossible.
Right.
I've got to say that I haven't seen episode 2 yet. I will imminently, but I loved the pilot. It really felt like a feature film, and I wanted to write a scathing letter to DirecTV demanding AMC in high definition.
It looks great in HD, but talking about the second episode real quick, I like the episode as far as the plot, and Rick's character was really smart in the episode. And the only negative thing I have to say, because I have to get this out, is that during the zombie apocalypse, you must carry a weapon with you at all times. That means when you go wandering through the woods looking for mushrooms, you carry a baseball bat as well. All right. Also, when you're going through sewers looking on how to get out of a building surrounded by zombies, you also carry a weapon. Why is it that these people who are veterans of the zombie apocalypse are running around empty-handed?
Okay. Well, they obviously don't have your book on surviving the zombie apocalypse 101.
That irritated me to no end. That was like, it took me out of the story and made me hate these people. I was like, you should be dead.
Well, Glenn doesn't fight. Glenn is more in the flight. He doesn't sit around and beat up the zombies. He makes off.
Oh, that's all fine and good, but you should still have the option. You know, it's like, what if you're surrounded, quickly, then what are you going to do? So
actually, you know, the one thing that kind of bugs me, and I hope that they eventually address it, they haven't yet, is that all the characters who have survived seem to have never actually seen a zombie movie. And how likely is that?
They were probably too busy watching Twilight or
Vampire Diaries. Well, they added two really good entries to the zombie survival guide this episode. So I guess zombies know you by smell.
That's yes, that was pretty good.
So you can cover yourself in zombie guts. I was like, oh, that's a really good. I actually put that
down. And that was a scene that will be sticking with me for a very sadly long time.
That was very disgusting.
Yummy stuff there. And then the using the sports car with the alarm as a distraction, another really good way to, you know,
because zombies. Yeah, well, in this universe, because zombies are attracted to sound, that was very good. I thought that was a very good thing. The only thing is he's driving down the highway later and he's enjoying himself. And I was like, dude, turn off the alarm. You know, because
how far do you want to have him follow you?
I know. I was like, you can turn off the alarm now. Come on. But I don't think that because he was just cruising and that was one thing. But I actually think this episode was pretty good. Another good entry. Rick, they fleshed him out as a character. They introduced the big racist guy, which I thought was...
Nah. I was not fond of him.
Yeah, because I was kind of like...
I think if the episode... And overall, the episode I don't think was as good as the
first
pilot
one,
was.
Right.
The opening was just blew me away. And this one was... It was good. It was solid, but it was not at the level that the opening episode was.
My,
I think part of the reason was actually those two characters of the racist and his victim. They were just such caricatures.
Yes, they didn't feel like real people.
Either of them.
Right, and I couldn't
understand. They needed the racist guy because that's an homage to Night of the Living Dead, and since they decided to give the biggest actor in the show that role, that you know, he's obviously gonna make it out of that.
All right, well, we hit the 5-minute mark. Got to move on. We're moving on to Dexter. Go.
That was a really good episode. I really, really, I was wondering where they were going to go when they first had him find the girl. And since then, they've actually used this in a really interesting, really unique way. I was not expecting the story to go in this direction.
Well,
and I really, I'm just interested. I'm engaged in it.
I'm kind of, I was thinking I knew where the season was going to end. I was like, okay, it's going to end with Dexter's going to kill her and blah, blah, blah. It's going to be like Jimmy Smith. But now I kind of feel like Dexter really cares about her now.
Which really doesn't mean she won't end up dead by the end of the season. But yeah, I think it's not going to be a Jimmy Smith kind of thing.
Right. Because the only thing I can see is that she's just going to get out of control to where he has to choose between protecting himself and his family and sacrificing her.
Or she's just going to do something that's fatally stupid and get herself killed in the process.
Right, because so far, on the intelligence scale, she has not been very high. But her and Dexter are strangely bonding. Like, their bond is really bizarre. And I can't decide if it's because his grief over his wife, or this is the first person he's really genuinely been able to be open with. Because even with all the other people that he shared his secret with, he's always held something back. Mm-hmm. And she's the first person that he hasn't really held anything back.
Right. Well, there's the emotional component, really. It's not just, oh, I do this. It's a very, very tight bond on a deeply emotional level, which I've never seen happen before. Yeah. And he sees himself in her. You keep getting that repeatedly. And I think that just opens it out to more possibilities.
Now, is the her, I'm forgetting who the actress is.
Stiles.
Julia Stiles.
Julia Stiles?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's really making it work. I really wasn't sure how that was going to work out, but I'm really buying into their relationship, and I'm really enjoying where this story is going so far. So, yeah, thumbs up for me.
Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff in this episode. We got to see Eli Stone be the main villain guy.
Oh, that's right. That's where he's from. I couldn't figure out where he was from. Yeah, Eli Stone. Okay.
Yeah, and Maria was messing up really big time this episode.
And she can't see it. I mean, she can't see that she's struggling so hard to maintain control of her department that she's totally screwing up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure.
I'm just waiting for her to throw Angel under the bus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that looks like that's happening. She keeps claiming that she loves him, but she loves herself more. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think that that's going to be a relationship for the ages. The only really weak part of the episode for me, and it's so strange for me to say it because I love him usually, is Peter Weller.
Yeah.
He's
always bad.
It's like his performance is from a completely different show. And he comes in like almost this cartoon villain. If he had a mustache, he'd be twirling it,
yeah.
His television performance, his guest roles of late have been really inconsistent. It's been, it's not in sync with the rest of the cast. When he was on 24 and he's been on some other stuff, it's like...
Yeah, well, he was on Fringe and he was brilliant in that. And part of the component of what made it so wonderful was how subtle he was. And boy, there's no subtlety in this.
No, he wasn't subtle on 24 either.
Well, nobody's subtle on 24, but he's basically the connection that I do like is Quinn. Even though I hate Quinn a lot,
seconded.
I really cannot wait until Deb figures out what the heck Quinn is doing.
Oh, that's gonna be a fun scene.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I hope she shoots him.
All right. So thumbs up this week for Dexter. It was a good episode.
And we all want to see Dexter's prom.
Oh, that's right. He was talking about referencing his prom. I don't know if I need to see that. I'm pretty sure I can understand how awkward it was. So next episode up, or next show up, is House. And this week's episode would made it different. We haven't talked about House in a while, but I felt the need to talk about this because we added a new cast member in Amber Tamblyn.
Joan of Arcadia.
Yes, Joan of Arcadia, for those... And I'm one of the people who did watch that show. And I've always liked her, but I wasn't sure how they were going to add her to this cast to make it interesting. And I have to say, by the time I finished the episode, I was like, all right, I want to see her participate, be part of the cast, I mean, part of the team, and see how that goes. I was kind of excited. I mean, I like how they made her... a strange, brilliant idealist. Like, they made her have an IQ almost as high as House's, but she doesn't have a lot of experience, so she's missing that component. And she has a strange disconnect with her patients, but she tries to overcompensate for it by being super morality girl. So that's kind of... I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, actually, you know, I'm unfamiliar with her. I haven't seen Joan of Arcadia or obviously the other things she's been in. When I saw the commercials for this episode, I was prepared to not like her because she looks like she's 12 years old, and it just doesn't seem like she'd be a member of this team. But they integrated her in a way that actually made me care about her character and made me believe that she was supposed to be as smart and as capable as they're selling her to be.
Right.
And I like that. And by the end of it, just like you, I was prepared to see her be part of the team.
Yeah. Did a great job with that.
Now, have they actually added her to the cast, or is she just a guest star right now?
Oh, you mean in the credits?
Yeah.
They don't, if House doesn't add anybody to the... What, those other two guys were part of the show for 3 seasons, and they weren't added to the cast? They were guest stars for 3 years. No, she has not been added to the official graphic. But she has been added, you know, as far as we know, for the rest of the season. Gotcha. She's part of the cast. But I think that she's a fresh take, which I think one of it was like Foreman was, or I don't remember if it was Foreman or Taub who said, well, we're the frogs in the soup. We have no idea, you know, if this...
Oh, that was Taub, yeah.
It was Taub. He was like, we have no idea if this water's hot or not, you know. So I was like, that's a very good
metaphor,
right. So she's the fresh take, and I think that I'm excited to watch House again. Well, I was kind of excited about the whole House-Cuddy relationship, which, by the way, got another bump because House does what he always does, which he lies to Cuddy to save his patient. He's been doing that for... How many seasons are we on? Season 6? So he's been doing it for 5... No, wait. 7? I forgot what season we're on. Well, however many seasons we have, that's how many seasons House has been lying to Cuddy. But now that he's dating her, he had the problem of trying to decide, should I keep lying to Cuddy... Should I, you know, tell her the truth or whatever? Because where's the line between boss and girlfriend? And he was like, well, we're at work. This is a job situation. So I'm going to act like she's my boss and do what I always do, which is lie to her. Which I felt was legitimate. That's a legitimate line. If she takes... Because, I mean, she's taken him lying to her for years and just dealt with it, you know? This time, though, she figures out that he's lying. And the last shot is you see how angry she is. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, well, that's not exactly fair. Because, granted, they're dating, but he didn't lie to her about their relationship. He didn't say... I mean, what he lied to her about was... a test result for one of his patients.
Yeah, but I think that that's going to have repercussions.
Oh, they yeah.
There for a reason, obviously.
I know it's going to have repercussions, but I'm just saying I don't think it's fair to House that they have repercussions because it was a work-related thing. If you're going to separate, if you're going to say that you're separating work from personal, then you can't get mad at him about something you didn't get mad at him about before. You know, because she used to just shrug off his lies because he did it all the time. And she'd be like, oh, well, that's House. And now yeah. it's like he's going to be...
now it's a personal thing.
Right.
So it's it becomes like a personal slam against her because she's expecting a greater amount of truth from him and trust between him. And I think that, you know, it may not be fair, but I think it's entirely believable.
Oh, I'm not saying it's not believable. I mean, it's totally believable, but I think that that's going to be part of the problem. They're going to have to talk about what's fair in work versus home, because mm-hmm. if they don't solve that, they're going to be done.
Yeah. Well, again, I think this is yet another relationship that is not for the ages.
No.
I like seeing them together because they've been building up to it for years. But I think that ultimately it's not going to end happily.
Yeah, I know. All right.
I mean, it's House.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about House.
All right. Let's move on to Lie to Me. I'm not sure how many people here saw it. Am I the only one? Well, if I'm the only one, I'm going to talk about it really quick. And my main thing that I wanted to talk about is I think a couple weeks ago I went on a rant about... how I didn't like Foster and Lightman's relationship because they were making them fight and they were having all these issues and it was like, it seemed like an arc because they had been fighting for like half the season so far and part of last season and I was getting really irritated. I didn't like that direction. And then all of a sudden this week, it's like full reverse. We're going in the opposite direction and... Foster basically has to protect Lightman from going to jail because he was at an illegal gambling thing where they were playing cards and he was playing against a bunch of well-known criminals. So the FBI were like, we're going to arrest him if you don't help us with this case. So they're like, fine. So Foster works on the case, solves it for them under the understanding that they can't try to bother Lightman again. And so she basically saves his butt. And then she proceeds to get completely out of her mind, whacked out drunk. And she's doing that with Torres. And her whole issue with that is that she's so happy. That's why she's getting drunk, because this time Lightman thanked her for saving him. And I was thinking back and I was like, no, he didn't. And so then that leads to the scene at the end where he's got the little cap on, the what is it, the miner's cap on, and he comes in, he sees her, and she is literally drunk off her butt, and like she can barely stand drunk, and she's all like, well, I'm gonna stand here till you thank me for saving you, and I'm not moving except the part where she's swaying. And he just basically, he thanks her and then they hug and it looks like they're dancing. And then they stop dancing, and she turns the light off on his hat, and she leans in, and it looks like they're about to kiss, and it goes to black. And that's the end of the episode. So there was a big scream and cry of frustration from me, because I can't tell what that means. I was like, does that mean they kiss? Does that mean nothing happened? Does that mean they had sex? I have no idea. And
or all three.
Oh, yes, or all three. So... I'm happy that it looks like their relationship is moving forward, but really, she was drunk off her butt, so I'm like, I don't think that Lightman would actually have sex with her if she was that drunk.
No.
But it was weird, and I can't understand why they ended the episode right where they did, other than to frustrate the fans. That's all I got. All right.
That's enough reason, really.
Okay, that's all I wanted to talk about for Lie to Me. I'm still loving the show. I think you should watch. Moving on. Next show up is Castle. Go.
I'm digging third season. It seems like the mysteries, the quality of the mysteries has increased, so you can't always figure them out in the first 5 minutes.
That's true. Normally, you're like, it's whoever they interview first is the killer. That's usually how it works, but this week I have to give them credit. The show changed from being about a murder of this guy and works in the subway, random, to... Because it was like they found him and they couldn't figure out like who killed him. Why would anyone want to kill this guy? They're going on this whole circuitous path about it, and then you find out, oh, it's a kidnapping. And so then it becomes this
whole other story. In the wrong place at the wrong time.
Exactly. Yep. And it becomes this whole other story, and this whole... It's like halfway through the episode, now we're doing a completely different episode. And I thought that was pretty good. Because there's no way you could have guessed any of that.
I would say that of all the episodes of Castle, this one was the one that stood out as breaking form the most. And I appreciated that a lot. Because like you said, it's like you're always looking for the first person they interview, and you've just said, oh, there's a killer.
Right.
And where this was concerned, they did something totally new, and I applaud them for that. I wish they would do that more often. Because as much as right now, the reason I watch Castle is because, I mean, primarily, I love Nathan Fillion, and I'd watch him read the phone book. And he's great. You know, he's wonderfully charismatic and, you know, fun to just look at. And that's great. But and as I've watched the show, I've gotten to like the other actors on it, too. So I like to see them interact with each other. But as a show itself, you know, as a murder mystery, their plotting is terrible.
Yeah.
And it's just horrendously predictable. And seeing them try to do something a little bit different is really, really nice. I hope they do more.
But it seems like this season especially, they've been a little bit less formulaic than previous seasons. I like seeing the boss involved in a case instead of just for exposition at the beginning of the... Or, you know... strategic points in the episode, or when they need to call in a favor from the mayor.
Right.
Yeah. Though he just sort of pokes his head out the door, says something, disappears again.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, that's pretty much... The only other thing I would have to say about Castle is that the daughter storyline was boring this week. Normally, I like her, and I like what they do with her character. This week, I was, like, ready to fast forward through her bits. So... I didn't care about the rat. I didn't care about the boyfriend. And it just seemed silly.
It seemed a little sitcom-y.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, right up until... I mean, I knew before they did that the very last thing that would happen in the episode is we'd hear the off-screen...
Eek!
I knew that would... And sure enough, that's exactly where they went.
Yeah. Has everybody heard that they picked it up for 2 more episodes?
I did,
so
but...
24 episodes this season.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's getting good ratings, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the event, which we haven't talked about in a couple of weeks.
See, now
well, it wasn't on a week ago. That's that might have something to do with
it. It was off. I didn't notice.
Oh, boo!
Now, I've been really frustrated because the pacing and the plot—it's needlessly complex. It's like, no, it's not needlessly complex. It's needlessly complicated.
It's needlessly attempting to be complex. How about that?
Yeah.
With all the flashbacks and stuff like that.
The flashbacks upon flashbacks. And, oh yeah, Blair Underwood is in this show.
No, but in the last couple of weeks, Blair Underwood is definitely in the show.
Yeah, but there were a couple of weeks where it's like you had like maybe a scene or two with him scowling at Zeljko Ivanic, and that was it.
Yeah, but the last couple of weeks when they have now said, okay, those guys in lockup are aliens... They've actually
Did they
said,
use the A
yes,
word
they
about
used,
freaking time.
They use the A word, and they're calling them.
I will say that other characters have used the A word. The people themselves do not refer to themselves exactly that way. So there, I think that there is something a little bit more to where they come from.
Right.
Than we just, know how they travel.
Another planet.
Yes, we know how they travel. Go ahead, Malcolm. Yeah. What do you say?
Yes, they travel with portal technology.
That is correct.
But we know that it moves in space, so it's spatial. We don't know if it moves in if it can move in time or other dimensions, though.
Well,
if I had to hazard a guess, I would say that they come from an alternate Earth, because you know they're how do you get aliens that look completely like human beings. By a little bit of DNA. No.
I don't think that's right. Well, I'm totally going to disagree. I don't think that's right at all, because they were very specific in this week's episode that they needed a couple more materials so that the portal goes far enough as far as distance. So
They didn't actually say it that way. They did say that they were looking for other materials because they couldn't go exactly where they needed to go. But they didn't, you know, if you just listen to it without really paying that much attention, it sounds like a distance issue, but it may not be.
I think there's
a possibility of it not being just, oh, they're from another planet.
And they are very sloppy about hiding things until they're all set to kind of try to reveal, and they knowingly mislead, like the whole talk between what's the leader of the alien of the other people,
Sophia
and Thomas, that whole conversation where they lead up to their relationship. They're like totally going in another way, so that there's this big, oh my God, you're her mom, my goodness, you know.
Right.
Which actually explained a lot.
Well, so, I actually
that's why you're such a little bitch.
I suspected it. I suspect, because he was whiny. But yeah, well, I suspect that flashback where they show them talking and he tells her to go and he doesn't want to leave her, I got the impression they were related versus they were lovers, which I think, Malcolm, you said you thought they were lovers at first.
Yeah,
so they did the big reveal that that's his mom.
Was it here?
And like I said, it made sense, because all that whiny petulance is something that you get from a kid.
in that same conversation where they reveal that, she kept going on about, you follow orders, and not like, hey, I'm your mom, you do as I say. It was like, you follow orders. So it was always like they're in some kind of a military. Oh, yeah, and by the way, I'm also your mom.
Go ahead.
Was it here a few weeks ago where somebody was suggesting that maybe they're from the future?
I had thought that there was a possibility of that, but if that were true, they would know more about this period of time.
Yeah.
And they don't, there are like huge gaps in knowledge that they would not have.
Or that they don't
so
have.
So I don't think that that's the case anymore.
The thing that's
I just don't trust that the makers of the show think that far out to like solve those kinds of problems. Like, oh yeah, that would be dumb if we did well, it'll work itself out later.
And you could be right about that too, because I mean, there's been a lot of sloppy writing on the show, so I would not be surprised.
My two observations are this: one, you better get to the freaking event soon, because I'm losing patience. Two, you better plan to wrap this up in one season, because these ratings have been terrible, and you're not get. I mean, unless NBC is completely up the creek, they're not getting a season two.
And you can tell the production value is high enough that the show is expensive.
It's expensive, so.
Well, and also the cast. I mean, they've got some quality people in there who definitely cost.
But they need
Hal Holbrook don't have that much left on this earth, so yeah, they got to wrap it up.
But they really do need to plan to wrap this up in one season, because this is, you know, all those people who thought Heroes was getting a wrap-up movie, psych.
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody cares.
No,
they don't. Like, does anybody care about that? All right, let's move on to Glee.
Oi.
Glee was good. Glee was actually good this week.
Yeah, here's Glee frustrates me because it's inconsistent from week to week. It's inconsistent within an episode. Yes, this was written by one of the three guys, Brad Falchuk, who knows how to write the show well. However, I just see them. I suggested that they are going to be jumping the shark soon on my Facebook page, and one of my students said, oh no, they're twirling in midair, tap dancing on top of the shark's nose. I mean, they're just flirting with disaster.
Yeah, they
and
are.
And the visit to the visit to the boys' school creeped me out. It was
Why
just
was it creepy?
Because the song they sing and the context, and you know that this is Kurt's future boyfriend / lover. It was just
I didn't know that.
It's been the worst.
I guess that
it's
was
been
probably
the worst kept secret.
I don't look at spoilers,
dude. I'm not talking spoilers. I'm talking about their own publicity.
I don't see any of that stuff. I'm very, very careful. So, I mean, by the end of the episode...
Oh, by the end of the episode.
I knew that that was...
Oh, by the end of the episode, but...
But at the time, I didn't know that.
Just...
And why was that creepy? That wasn't creepy.
I didn't
The song?
I didn't think it was
Did you listen to the lyrics of the song?
No, not really.
Listen to the lyrics of the song.
I didn't find it creepy.
Why would it be creepy?
Just, it's not written to be sung by a guy, for starters.
So?
Well, maybe you're more progressive than I am. And the other thing, Schuster, oh my gosh.
Schuster has issues.
Schuster is...
Well, that whole kiss with Beast could have gone a couple of really bad ways.
Yeah.
I understood what he was...
kind of cringing while it was happening, going, don't.
I understood what he was trying to do, and I understood that he was trying to be nice, and I get that, but that could have been very disastrous.
He needs... Yeah. That
well, you know, was I the only person who was expecting Sue to come walking in at just that moment?
No, I didn't think anything like, because they were trying to make a point, so I didn't really think that was going to happen. But what were you going to say?
There's a fine line between reality and this hyper alternate version of Earth.
I was like, Lee isn't not in reality. Yeah, we know that.
But every once in a while, they come back down to something resembling reality, and it's just... Schuster, as a character, they better do some severe rehabilitation on that character or else... I mean, it is literally hanging by a thread as to whether I will watch or not. That Rocky Horror episode was so awful. Bad.
That was awful.
I mean, there's a... Zaptuit.com has a 12-step program to fix Glee, and all of their suggestions are good, and then some. But I just... the show, there's so many cringe-worthy moments, it seems.
I thought this episode was fantastic, though.
But the thing with Beast was just, aside from being,
I love this episode.
I will agree that the bit with Beast was, and actually the whole thing with her through the episode was kind of making me cringe, because, that was something that they didn't need to do, like, oh, the kids are going through this, and, oh, guess what? The adults do, too. You know, I don't need that kind of lesson.
It's the equivalent.
And the whole way that they had the scene together with her and Schuster, you know, and he's leaning in and he's giving her a kiss, and I'm thinking, oh, God, you know, please. First of all, it's creepy coming from Schuster, who at this point we know will kiss
anybody.
And the other thing is, you know, when he says to her, well, now you've been kissed. And I'm thinking, I literally said out loud in the room, oh, because every girl thinks of a pity kiss
as a real kiss.
As a real kiss.
Yeah.
I'm still...
That's made my life. You know, I mean, it was just kind of painful. But the rest of the episode, which and when I saw commercials for it, I was dreading it because I thought it was going to be another one of these very special episodes of Glee.
Aren't they all?
I actually really, really liked it, and I thought that they handled it
well. I want to talk about the Kurt thing real quick before we run out of time, which is I really thought that putting into focus the stuff that he goes through every day and he's dealing with on his own. I mean, everyone else is dealing with, oh, we're members of Glee and we get bullied. But he has this other thing that's hanging over his neck all the time that he's dealing with on his own. And I like the fact that he talked about, you know, he goes to the authorities and he tells them this stuff goes on. And they're kind of like, oh, we feel sympathetic, but, you know, you chose to be gay and your life sucks. So that whole conversation and that discussion I thought was really interesting. And of course, the guy that's beating him all this time is closeted, which I wasn't sure how I felt about that. Some of it I'd say is Thomas is barely restraining himself. Some of it I thought was good, because that does happen. Mm-hmm. But it also did feel a little stereotypical, because you could have seen it coming. You saw that one coming. But I also like the fact that they didn't have the happy ending. You know, he deals with the guy. He has the conversation with the guy. You're like, yeah, you're closet. Let's talk about it. It totally doesn't work. And the dude is back to bullying him again.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so I actually...
slams him into the locker.
Right. I actually thought that by not going with the obvious, cheesy, happy ending... that I thought that was pretty cool.
But see...
Yeah, I mean, for Glee, that was hardcore. It was like real gritty reality.
But see, you can't have it both ways. That's my problem with the tone of the show. You can't say we're in hyper-reality one moment, and now we're avoiding the stereotypical, you know, that you've seen everywhere else, and now we're in something resembling real reality. It's just, it's all over the place. And three observations about Kurt. One, he still needs to stop acting like a little you-know-what. Two, they still haven't fully dealt with him being, with his, the thing with him and,
Finn.
And Finn.
Well, they addressed it. It was more, Finn was very clear, I am not interested in you, the end.
In fact, they addressed it twice.
The problem with how they've addressed it is they don't do it consecutively. If you're going to do, you know, when you construct story arcs, you bring it up and then you complete the arc before you move on. And they did something, they did one part of it last season and then one part of it earlier this season and then another part later this season. It's like you need to bring it all to fruition before you can say, okay, we're done with it, we're moving on. And they don't do that. It's just...
I feel you have a deeper writer's issue with the show. I feel there's like a different layer of frustration for you for that.
Well, you know, I agree with him in a lot of ways in that Glee is dramatically extremely inconsistent and the writing has been all over the map. I mean, sometimes you get a show that really holds together like this last one.
Foul Chucks.
And you know, there's like periodic times the one that ended with the duets episode, which was also excellent. But then you get all the episodes in between those, and it's just, you know, you're up, you're down, you're up, you're down, and the characters are all over the place. You brought up Schuster earlier, and I agree. He used to be a character who I cared deeply about, and then they turned him into a kind of creepy, sleazy guy.
Yeah, I agree
with
you, Allison.
And I don't know how to feel about him anymore.
Exactly. I mean, and that's all that's true. And we apparently can talk about this for an hour, which we're not going to. We are now going to move on, because we all have very varied opinions on it. We're going to move on now to Stargate Universe.
And Tom will take a nap. As if he was watching Stargate Universe.
All right, Malcolm, you haven't talked in a while. What do you think? Stargate Universe.
Whoops, cat's out of the bag.
What do you mean?
They found out how Rush's control of the ship.
Oh, right. Yes, the whole... I knew that... You knew that secret one is going to last forever.
Oh, yeah.
What's the secret for those of us who stopped watching?
That Rush found the bridge of the ship, and he had control over navigation and control over, like, everything, and he kept it a secret for about half this season. And they finally found out about the bridge now, so now everyone knows about the bridge, and they beat the crap out of him for keeping it a secret.
I bet you the Marine was like number five. Boom!
No, it was actually Young. Colonel Young beat him to a pulp. It was awesome.
Of course, that's nothing new between their two of them. That's the standard for their relationship.
Exactly.
See, on Glee, they would just
sing it out.
No, they would find out that they're really attracted to each other.
Colonel Young would have
sing a duet, and then.
Yes, I see that happening in the future.
Actually, I really like this episode because a lot did happen. They finally moved the story forward and said, okay, yeah, everyone does find out about this. So, you know, we're going to push this forward and have stuff happen. And they revealed also what Destiny's real purpose
mission
was.
Right.
And the answer
I
is?
I thought that was important, too. Because instead of just sort of just winging through the universe pointlessly, there was an actual reason behind this.
The actual... Yeah, the whole... It's basically they're looking for the answer to the universe. And I'm like, it's 42. So
we can go home now.
Yeah, so the ship is collecting data because apparently the ancients found an underneath all the signals of the universe gives off, they found this like ancient equation or pattern or whatever. And so the ship is going around collecting data to solve the equation and find out the answer to the universe.
Yeah, which is sort of, it kind of hints at like a hunt for God, which, you know, kind of about because that usually ends somewhere maudlin and awful, but
you mean like in Star Trek V?
Yes.
Oh, God, please don't go there.
I think that Rush's excitement about trying to do this mission, my whole thing is I was like, dude, yeah, you can do that mission, let us off at home. You know, you can go ahead and do the mission all you want, but now that we have navigational control over the ship, anybody who wants to go home should be able to go home.
Yeah.
Well,
that's not going to happen, but it's a good idea.
Yeah, he kind of had a double on what they were doing. Like he was trying to say, hey, if we find this answer, we can make ourselves go home because if you find the Big Bang structure, you can use it to control the universe. Thus, you can send yourself home. And as he's saying that, I'm thinking, oh, hey, and you're going to use it to resurrect your wife.
Right.
But there's also, you know, the issue when he was talking about that, I was thinking, you know, the ship has been flying around for 90,000 years.
Yeah.
What makes you think you're going to find the answer in your lifetime?
I was thinking that, too.
Or a 7-year run on Siffy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that, too. I was like, this ship is really, really old, and all the ancients have died out looking for the answer to this question.
Mm-hmm. Or they found it and made themselves ascend.
Oh, that's true. That's a very good point. But you would think that data would be in the ship's computer, though.
Mm-hmm. No, they ascended before they uploaded it.
Eh, I don't think so.
So it sounds like you're saying that I should, when 2.0 comes out on DVD or Blu-ray, I should...
Well, this Netflix is actually 1.5.
No, this is season 2.
No. Oh, you're right. I'm confused with
that. So when 2.0 comes out, I should Netflix it and find out from you which are the good episodes and skip the lame ones.
There's a couple of lame ones. There are a couple of lame ones, but I have to say this season, it's been more good than lame.
And this one's great because
Avoid the wedding episode. Avoid the wedding episode at all cost.
Okay. Who gets married?
It doesn't even matter. All right, Malcolm, what were you saying?
This episode is great because this is the one where Eli gets a piece of the bunk.
Oh, you're trying to say that he got a girlfriend. I had to translate that for everyone else.
Yeah.
Yes, he got a girlfriend, and she immediately is going to be killed. She is facing death at the end of the episode. It faded to black with a guy coming into her quarters to kill her.
Bum, bum, bum.
And so then they show a preview for next week. It doesn't look good.
No.
But, all right, Stargate Universe has been much better this season, and thumbs up. Moving on to Psych, which has come back for, I don't understand how they break up the seasons for this at all, but it's like, they had a summer run of maybe like 10 episodes or less, and then it was off the air, and now it's back for November to, I'm not sure, like we get like 4 or 5 episodes, and it comes back in January. I have no idea what's going on.
It's very strange.
I hate when they do that with a show. Yeah. I absolutely detest this breaking up of seasons.
Yeah, and they're breaking it up in odd little increments. That's the thing that frustrates me. So I'm like, I can even deal with you splitting it in half. Because at this point, I'm totally used to it. I'm like, split the show in half, okay, fine. But USA is now doing this weird, we're splitting it up into quarter. I don't know what the heck they're doing, but anyway.
And they're launching more shows. I found out why Deming's been gone from Castle. He's got a new show on USA.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He's in the...
Not really.
It's called Fairly Legal.
With...
I know is she's from Life. She's a partner from Life. But we're off topic. We're talking about Psych. All right. So the Psych episode... is back from the cliffhanger that they had at the end of the mid-season or whatever. And that's the whole thing was Sean basically semi-confessed his feelings to Juliet. And when I say semi, he was starting to, and then he didn't, and then she kissed him, and then blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, what? And so then this season, you find out that she broke up with her boyfriend. And because it looked like Sean was admitting his feelings, but of course she comes at an inconvenient time, and then he tried to blow her off, and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, if they screw this up for the 20th time, I was like, I'm shooting someone. But at the very end, they didn't.
I love when they do the episode set in Canada, because when you know it's shot there, and they have all the Canadian jokes, it's like...
Right, yeah. I think this is the second or third episode they've done that's been in Canada, because for some reason, that's the vacation spot for these guys. But yeah, this one was supposed to be in Canada as well. They had the little money joke or whatever, loons or something. But the episode itself was, what is that man's name?
Despero.
Despero.
He's Carrie Always.
Yeah, the great, magician / thief. That was pretty good. Like, he's having a conversation with them in the prison, and he's talking about how he's going to escape, and they're laughing at him, and then he's in their car. I was like, what? And talk about hyper-reality. That Psych is a hyper-reality show where the stuff that happens in real life does not happen on Psych. But it's fine, because I like it.
I agree.
You saw it. What'd you think?
I thought it was a fun episode. It's good to see Carrie Elwes has lost a little bit of weight since his first appearance on the show. But I keep thinking, dude, you were supposed to be the It Boy after Princess Bride. What happened to your career?
He was so pretty after that. I don't know. He just totally disappeared.
I kind of
saw.
I kind of miss not having the integration. Being in Canada, you didn't have the whole team of operatives
right
that you have when they're set in Santa Barbara or shot in Canada. But it was a fun romp, and they left the door open for Elways and Despero to come back to the show. I agree with Libya. They better not screw up this whole Juliet Sean thing.
Yeah.
Because they've created so many artificial obstacles, including She's All That, Rachel Lee Cook or whatever.
Yeah, they had girlfriends, they had assassins, they've had all kinds of things keep them apart. And finally, it looks like they're together, and I'm like, all right, just leave it. I don't even need to see a lot of time with them together, because they're kind of like Chuck and Sarah a little bit, where I don't mm-hmm. need to see their actual relationship. I just need them to be together, and then that's it. I'm fine. I'm happy.
Bingo.
I don't need to see anything else. Anyway, so Psych, thumbs up. I'm glad it's back. I have no idea how many episodes it's back for, but yeah, watch it. It's all on Netflix Instant, too. There you go. All the USA shows are now.
Ooh.
Next up, we're going to talk Big Bang. What'd you guys think? All right, I miscalculated. I thought somebody else had seen Big Bang, but apparently not. So the only thing I'm going to say about the episode, it was one of the funniest ones that they've had. And we had Will Wheaton back as Will Wheaton. He is an awesome villain for this show. It's fantastic. And, of course, they're, like, standing in line to watch a big print with extra 21 seconds for Indiana Jones. It's like a whole new movie. And they stood in line forever for it. And, of course, they don't get in line because Will Wheaton got in and jumped the line. So, of course, that makes him the villain. But the best scene ever was Sheldon decided that if they couldn't see the film, then no one could. So he steals the prints for the film, and his friends are like, what are you doing? They're like, that's crazy. And he goes, what's crazy is the projector booth left unguarded. And so he runs out of the theater, and Will Wheaton sees him and sees that he took it, and the entire theater is chasing him, and it's right out of an Indiana Jones movie. It was great. It was so good. And counterpoint to that was that the girls decided to have a girls' night in, so it was Penny, Wallowitz's girlfriend, who I can't remember her name, and Sheldon's not girlfriend.
Slash Blossom.
So they all had a girls' night in, and that was the most awkward girls' night I've ever witnessed in my life. Because, what is her name? I forgot her name. Blossom. We'll call her Blossom.
I'll call her Blossom.
That's easier. She was hilarious because she thought that because it was a girls' night, they had to talk about their lady parts. And she was talking about like the diameter and the tilt of her ovaries. It was fantastic. And then they tried to play Truth or Dare, and she had never played it before and was really not familiar with how the game is played. And it was so awkward and so hilarious. So I'd say both storylines they did for the episode were really good and were really funny. And now that Penny is back, yay, the rhythm of the show is back. And I say thumbs up, my show's back. I'm happy. Next up, we want to talk about Vampire Diaries. And this was one of the biggest episodes that they've had all season. The title, like, I was watching and I turn on my TiVo and I click the episode and it just says, Katarina. And I was like, and I knew it was going to be huge. Because this is what we've been waiting for, which is our flashback for Catherine to find out what the heck happened in her origin. And so this was her origin story, and I was very happy and very pleased. And I like the fact that all the information she gave a buttload of information. But because it's Catherine, you're kind of like, okay, some of that was a lie. Like, somewhere in there she's lying.
Or something was left out,
true. So you know that you don't have the whole story, but she tells you a story that makes you feel like you have the whole story. And the best scene ever, of course, what is that dude's name? It wasn't Klaus is the big bad guy we haven't seen yet, but his soldier.
The guy who played, Gwen Stacy's boyfriend in Spider-Man 3.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The actor. Daniel Gillies is the actor's name.
But he's one of the originals. His name is...
When he,
I can't remember what his name is either.
When he unstakes himself and comes up.
The quarters.
Oh, that was so awesome. Oh, my gosh.
The quarters was the best scene ever because he's got these quarters for like 10 minutes. He's like, he's just playing with the quarters and you don't know what he's doing.
I was wondering if he was using them to amplify his hearing or
what. You didn't know what he was doing.
It's like, whoa, that was freaking cool.
Because I thought he was going to crush him and make something out of it. And I was like, the vampire strong enough to crush quarters to do something? I didn't know what the heck he was doing. And so he's listening into this conversation and he waits till it gets to a point where he's decided they've talked long enough and he takes the quarters and he just kind of casually flips them at the window because they were like, oh, this window is tempered glass so the rays of the sun don't bother us and we can sit out and enjoy the sun, blah, blah, blah. So it's like a cafe full of vampires just hanging out with the tempered glass. And he tosses the quarters quite casually, and it totally disintegrates the front window, and all the vamps start burning. It's fantastic. Oh, man, that was great. That was a really great scene. And, of course, the episode made you fear Klaus more, even though we haven't seen him. But they give him more juice. And the scene where Catherine is in the tomb, and they're like, oh, you want to trade the stone to get out of the tomb, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, why would I want to get out of this tomb?
I'm safe here.
She's like, I'm safe. No vampire's coming in here. And I was like,
I've got Elena as a decoy.
And I was like, that's brilliant. And she's like, I'm not coming out of here. You guys are screwed. That was a really good scene because everything that you thought that you knew was totally like flipped on his head too. Because you were like, you know, as the audience, you're thinking, okay, Catherine's trying to figure out how to get out. She's manipulating Elena. And she's like, nope. She is trying to manipulate Elena.
Oh, yeah.
But she's like, nope, I don't need to come out until this is blown over. Let me know. Call me in a decade. You know, so
now,
that was pretty good.
I thought it was interesting that they think so little of Bonnie that she would just throw Jeremy under the bus for some new hot guy in town.
Well, it does look like that's what she's doing, though.
Yeah, but I mean, considering that the kid's dad evidently is up to no good because he's in league with the
big bad.
But I just thought it was, come on. She's like, you're my best friend's brother. It's like, well, that would be a reason why you would, you know, they've known each other for a long time.
Yeah, but this, I think, I know, and it's just, but it's new, though. She's just now seeing him as a potential guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in the last, like, two episodes. She's like, all right, he could be a potential guy that I could maybe go with. But she has this whole embarrassment factor, too, that she's trying to deal with. New hot guy, he's her age, she's got no embarrassment factor, not her best friend's brother. He's a cleaner, he's a cleaner guy for her to go after.
And he's a witch?
Yeah.
Sign me up.
No, he is a warlock.
I know.
When he said that, I was like, yeah. The only negative was what? Oh! My only negative that I have for this episode, because I loved it, was that in the flashback with Catherine, and she escapes, and she goes back to her family, and all her family is dead. My problem with that is Klaus knows that the doppelganger line runs in her family. And she's escaped and been turned into a vampire. She is no longer useful. Why would you kill her family if that is the line that produces a doppelganger? He needs a doppelganger to do his plan. His plan is foiled because Catherine is now a vamp, so he needs another doppelganger. Why would you kill the line? That makes absolutely no sense to me.
The whole doppelganger thing is still kind of, I mean, I think I understand it, but it's a little...
It is fuzzy.
It's a little fuzzy. And they're not just making it up as they go along, because they've got the books to at least use as source material. But, no, I like the episode. I like the thing with, is this the episode where Bonnie told one of the brothers that she confessed to Tyler what she is? And they're like,
that was Caroline.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. Sorry, not Bonnie. Caroline.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see them bring Caroline kind of back to her former self with the added bite, so to speak.
Yeah. Nice pun.
But no, I love this show.
I love Caroline. And if you had told me that I was going to love Caroline midway through first season, I would have thought you were crazy. She is one of my favorite characters now, and I don't actually understand how they managed to do that. And I like Jeremy now. I don't know how they did that either. I hated Jeremy early on, and I love him now.
Self-pity and depression are not fun to watch.
True.
Cinematically in TV or film. So when Jeremy was just having a pity party about Vicky, who was bleh to begin with.
Right, that's true.
Who cares?
Alright, let's, so thumbs up for Vampire Diaries. If you're not watching it, why the heck not?
Shame on you.
Get on board!
Yeah!
Alright, the next show we want to talk about is Fringe.
This is the one where Walter says, if you end up breaking the universe this time, it's on your head?
Yes, that is
the one. Wait a minute, I thought Walter broke the universe the first time.
Yeah, he did break it the first time.
But this time.
He said, if you break it this time, it's on Peter's head, because Peter's the one screwing around with the big devices.
I think he put the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
What I loved about the line was I just kept thinking of, you know, you break it, you bought it, young man. Yeah,
seriously. I know. Seriously. It was very much, I broke it last time, this is my mistake, I don't want you to repeat my mistake. Actually, this is good, because this is the episode where I can definitively say I'm sick and tired of the faux Olivia. I want my Olivia back.
She's not very sympathetic. She really is.
I really don't like her now.
Here's the thing that kind of annoyed me about Thursday's episode, especially after last week's episode.
Which was great.
Which was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I was really counting on someone in our universe to figure out that this is not the real Olivia. Now,
and there were so many moments like that where I just thought, are you dumb?
Seriously. Nina she's might close. Be onto her.
I think she is, actually.
And Walter... Who knows? Because
his brain works differently.
He has moments of clarity, but I was disappointed that Peter couldn't figure it out.
It's like,
come on, Peter.
She had so many things that she was red
on a
flags.
Platter, right? You know, and he just kind of just breezed right
well,
by
that's,
it. Like,
that's
like
because.
He saw it, but he didn't want to see it.
He's
know?
Thinking
like,
with the wrong organ right
he's
now.
He's got to have it.
Yeah, so I...
He's just so glad he's getting something. He's not going to look too closely at the details.
Right. It's just... Because before, when they were going back and forth between the universes, I was like, this is so great. I really love it. They're hitting them all out of the park. This is the first episode where I was really just irritated. I was irritated because everybody I felt was stupid. And she was manipulating, not only did she manipulate them subtly, but she manipulated them all very successfully, and that ticked me off too, because I'm like, really? She manipulated everyone?
Yep.
And I was just like, come on.
Yeah. You know what's interesting, though, is that I'm finding, like you said, I really can't stand Folivia. I mean, she's getting on my nerves. But you go into the alternate universe, and you've got Olivia... who is, you know, she's essentially taken over Folivia's life and is apparently behaving in the way that Folivia would, and yet I like her there.
Right.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
I do too.
It's like when she's with her team, and I wish she'd be with that boyfriend more often. She's great,
Crusoe.
And I love the dynamics between the characters, but when she's in this universe, she's creepy. And I don't like her at all.
Well, that's because she's manipulating characters that we like. That's part of the problem. Is she's totally manipulating Peter. She's manipulating Walter and Astrid and everybody else.
And
you know that she would kill them if necessary. If necessary.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, she has that cold-blooded character here in this universe. But when we see her in the other universe, and like I said, presumably that's her personality, she doesn't seem that cold-blooded. She doesn't seem like she's just an icy assassin.
Well, I mean, she's trying to preserve that universe, and those are the people that she cares about. And
well,
in her mind, these people aren't real. These people are imitations.
Shadows.
They're shadows, and they're expendable. And that's how she's behaving.
Yeah, but I think you've also got Peter, who's, you know, he's in between worlds too, and yet he sees and I think other characters do also see the humanity of the people on the other side.
Right.
They're not all gung-ho to go killing people. I think the only character who's really gung-ho about that idea is Walternet.
That's I kind of agree with that. I think Walternet set the tone of let's kill them all.
Yes.
Because
it's
I feel
us
like
for them, take them out.
Exactly. So
it seems like we're headed toward a merging of the two universes. That looks like that's what the ultimate.
I don't think they can merge. I don't think it can merge that.
Don't both of them get destroyed if you try that?
Yeah, yeah. They said they were very clear.
That's coming from Walternet. I think what Peter is working on, because that's what he was asking her about, you know, when they were having that discussion about, hey, which one dies. And
he said. He said he wanted to believe in an alternative, right?
Yeah, that would be an alternative, merging them together.
Yeah, but they showed, they had this whole thing where it was, it wasn't Walton that was saying this. This was, I thought it was Leonard Nimoy, where he showed, he had the little snow globes mm-hmm. showing the two worlds, and he showed what happened if they tried to merge, yeah. both of them get blown up.
Yeah, they crack.
They crack. So you can't, they very were clear that you can't merge the two universes.
Mm-hmm. It's a...
I think the best scenario we're looking at is that, you know, the little holes could be plugged somehow, that yeah. they could fix what's wrong.
Exactly. That you can close that door mm-hmm. between them. I think that's the best option.
It's a credit to Anna Torv that she makes Olivia and Folivia so different.
Oh, yes. That's so true. And, you know, it's funny because when the show started, if I was going to say that there was a weak link acting-wise in the cast... it would have been her.
I was going to say the same
thing. And she's so impressing me this season.
I was going to say the same thing. When the show first started, I thought, boy, you brought us Jennifer Garner and Kerry Russell, and this is the first time where I don't think you've done a good job casting your right. female lead.
She was the reason I stopped watching the show initially in first season.
Yeah.
But, all right, she's doing a great job this season. I'm definitely liking the show. I thought this was the first misstep they've had all season.
I'm just disappointed that Peter was thinking with
he's a
with
guy.
The wrong parts.
He's a guy.
That's, and don't forget that Astrid's powers are starting to manifest in our universe.
That's true. I noticed that. I was like, Astrid is being really awesome.
I loved Astrid getting to do more than just really get was. Coffee or caddy for Walter.
Well, I mean, obviously she's smart because, I mean, that's why she wouldn't be there. But this was the first time they've actually let that intelligence be highlighted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like that because, you know, normally she's just fetching coffee and cereal and, you know, doing little scut work, helping to take bodies apart for Walter. Mm-hmm. And seeing her do something that was really her in action, doing
cool
what she does
smart.
Clearly best, was yeah. great.
Yeah.
Go, girl.
All right, let's move on to Supernatural. Go ahead.
I'm totally digging season 6. I was a skeptic before we started, but
I was going to say pretty much the same thing. The only thing I have to say was this episode was the first episode where I didn't like it.
It was kind of an interesting take on something that we've seen before. I mean,
the whole werewolf thing, you mean?
The were-dog.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like it was weird because it felt like a standard episode of Supernatural, but you've got Robo Sam in there to make it interesting. But I find that the more they reveal Robo Sam, the more I don't care about him. Like, as they fleshed out his character,
which is interesting theoretically, you should care more so they get his soul back so we can get our Sam back.
Yeah, but I really feel like it's going to be a while. Like that, I feel like that's going to be the end of the season.
I don't think so. If I were the writers,
right.
I would say that getting Sam's soul back is part the end of Act One of this season's journey. This whole war in the heavenlies and what's going
on—that's true.
This whole new world order, which is what I had read about what the season was going to be about. I think that's going to. This is just one small piece of a larger picture.
Well, it does seem
like Crowley crowing. I'm not just an ordinary crossroads demon. I'm king of hell, Jack, and don't you forget it.
Well, that I agree that the task that they've been given does not seem insurmountable. Like, all they have to do is do one thing that Crowley wants. He gets his soul back, done. It doesn't seem like it should take the whole season to do it.
I don't think it's going to.
But I just, I don't... Robo Sam? He's starting, like, the more I find out about him, the less I trust him, and the less I'm kind of like, Sam should just, I mean, Dean should just leave. You know, I'm kind of like, Dean should just... either go try to get his soul on his get the what but he needs for the soul on his own, because I would not trust him to have my back.
But see, I love the way that Crowley has manipulated everything to his advantage.
Well, yeah, I love that too.
It's just, I mean,
I'm not
basically
Crowley's awesome.
It's all the dominoes, It's funny because I moderated a panel with Mark Shepard on it at Dragon Con and said, you usually play the heavy. And he was taking, you know, this is before he revealed he had this huge arc on Supernatural this year. And he bristled it. I'm not a bad guy. It's like, dude, yes, come on, seriously. Every single show, you're at least morally conflicted, and usually the bad guy.
But he plays the bad guy so well.
Yeah, he does. I mean, it's the charm.
I mean, really, that's to me, that was the best thing about this last episode, was watching Mark Shepard, because he's just so great at what he does. I mean, it's so much fun to watch. And he's clearly having fun doing this. Mm-hmm. And so it's a pleasure to see him. But I agree with Livia that there really wasn't much to this episode. It felt like filler.
Yeah.
But despite the fact that we had like a little revelation from Sam at the end, a little confessional, which really didn't tell us anything that we didn't already kind of know. It was a show about a dog.
Well, I was going to say, the only thing that his confession did was, last week we were all wondering, why did Sam choose to go with Dean instead of staying with Samuel? And because I was like, well, somebody was like, oh, maybe there's a residual connection between them, that he cares about them, like on a cellular level, because they're brothers, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't think so. And this episode really confirmed that, nah, I don't really care about you. And I'm like, dude,
Are your girlfriend or her little brat?
I was like, you know what? I can't be around you. Like, that was what I was feeling. Because his whole reason for his confession was, he felt like, oh, well, if I don't tell you this, then you're going to leave. And I was like, well, that made me want to leave even more. You know, so.
Well, but, you know, you have to understand, he's got no sense of anything right now. He has no emotional context in which to put anything. That was a major part of who Sam was, you know, being deeply emotional and feeling very, very deeply about everything.
I have a question.
Having that cut out really, you know, it sets him adrift. Now, he knows that this is a serious flaw in him, enough so that even though it's easier to go through life without feeling, he wants to correct this.
Well, that's the other thing I find interesting. I don't understand exactly why he would want his soul back, because now he feels nothing. His life is easy. He doesn't sleep. He has more days, more hours out of the day. He's a much fiercer hunter. Other than, he can't socialize with people.
No.
I think it's a matter of he knows that it's not right, and
but why does he care? He doesn't care it's not right.
He doesn't care that it's not right. But I think because
it's not emotionally, no, because he doesn't have an emotional context. But I think that there's some part of him that's judged that he is better.
He's more effective. He is more effective with it and working with his brother than without his soul and working.
The other question, Africa, why does he care about doing the job?
Why does he care about anything?
I know. He's just like, well, I want
to
be...
I think it's more the excitement level at this point, you know, just having something to do, because what else would he do? I mean, this is really something that fills that void. He doesn't have an emotional life, really, but this is something that's at least exciting and active. And
I guess he understands it, too.
He understands it. This has been his life for a long time. So it's a great fallback position, you know. What else would he do besides, like, sit at a desk somewhere?
Well, no, he would be a very good serial killer. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but in a sense, he's doing that now. It's just that the things that he's killing aren't necessarily human.
Oh, did you catch the cross, the shout-out? Dean called him Dexter.
Yes.
Yes.
I heard that.
I was like, oh. I was like, don't give him ideas, man. All right, so that's pretty much it wrapping up. If you guys have any feedback for us, you know where to send it to, tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @tvcampfire. And we're trying to get together a blog. And I'll give you news on that as we get it. All right, talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
So long.